So what's next for weed? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at the local and national push to decriminalize marijuana. What do you think about that? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, an exciting new announcement from WJCT Public Media, your holiday gift. We'll tell you what we've got cooking over here. But first this hour, the latest on the coronavirus pandemic numbers in Florida. The state reported an increase of 7,711 cases yesterday. The cumulative total in Florida stands at 1 million and change. Resident deaths increased by 105. The total number of deaths in the state from COVID is at 19,282. Those are the latest numbers. The hospitalization count is rising too. So the bottom line is, as we head into the holiday weeks here, please keep masking up, everyone. Well, in other news, something remarkable happened last week. On Friday, the House of Representatives approved decriminalizing marijuana at the federal level, the first time Congress has ever acted on this issue. Now, it's branded the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, or MORE Act. And what this legislation would do is remove cannabis from the list of federally controlled substances. And also, it would cancel low-level federal convictions and arrests related to marijuana. This is not expected to pass in the Senate. Here in Florida, most major cities around the state have passed or tried to pass legislation that would also do this, decriminalize cannabis. In Jacksonville, Councilman Garrett Dennis introduced one bill to decriminalize in the city. It failed. He's got another one on tap that hasn't been heard yet. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look. We have an expert on tap right now, and it's always great to get her insights. It's Sally Peebles. She's a partner with Vicente Cederberg and a member of Florida's Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. She's on the line. Hi, Sally. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Always good to have you on the show. Here's our question to callers. Where do you stand on decriminalizing marijuana? Give us a call as we talk about the vote Congress took last week, the House of Representatives, and the movement here in Florida. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJacks. And our Facebook page is open. Well, before we talk Florida and Jacksonville, Sally, let me get your reaction to the MORE Act. It's called the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act. It passed in the House. It will not pass in the Senate, at least not now. What exactly would this legislation do when it comes to marijuana possession?
So it would end federal marijuana prohibition by descheduling marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act. It's currently listed as a Schedule I drug, along with substances like heroin, so it would remove it entirely. Critically, it would also require all federal marijuana convictions to be expunged, all of them, not just the low-level ones. And that's pretty key here. Can you imagine sitting in jail right now for a federal marijuana possession charge and seeing what's going on with the country and it getting legalized and still sitting in jail? So that must be frustrating. So that would be great news. And it would also establish a 5% federal tax. A lot of people, I'm getting a ton of calls about this, you know, what does this really mean? Does this mean that if it did pass, would people be able to smoke pot in the streets or have whatever they want on them? And that is not the case. State law would not be preempted, and that's important for people to understand. You know, the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution contains the anti-commandeer language. And that just says the federal government can't commandeer and they basically can't boss around the state by forcing them to enact laws in the federal interest. For example, they can't reach out to the Florida legislature and make them pass a law that says marijuana is illegal here. But what it would do would, you know, allow people to get out of jail and it would take away that federal risk for being convicted.
How many people are in behind bars right now because of these kinds of convictions around the country?
I don't have statistics on that. I will tell you that FBI data back in 2018 said 90% of drug arrests in the United States are for simple possession. That's pretty staggering. I mean, a lot of people think of drug arrests as these kingpins or cartel. That's simply not the case. 90% of those arrested are just in there for simple possession, for private use.
So how significant is it then that Congress actually acted on this issue? It passed in the democratically controlled House of Representatives. It will not pass the Senate. But clearly the momentum around the country is with decriminalization, including a number of law enforcement observers and experts. They make a conservative case for this. What about that?
So even though it may not pass the Senate, this is still momentous. This is the first time since the passage of this Controlled Substances Act that a congressional chamber has ever even voted on legislation to remove marijuana from the CSA. And really critically, for those of us paying attention, and I hope everyone is, this vote put the House members on record. This means that the American people now know who in the House supports cannabis legalization and who still opposes it, and they should vote accordingly. And finally, this got a majority, a 228-162 vote. This is going to give reformers and activists in D.C. political leverage they need to really encourage the Biden team to support changes. So I see a lot of people out there saying, oh, who cares? It's not even going to get a Senate vote. That's just not the case. Still really momentous, and it could be really paving the way for some serious change.
A Gallup poll last month shows the majority of Americans support decriminalizing or legalizing marijuana, 68% of U.S. adults. And this has bipartisan support, Sally. You know, it's that rare issue where people from both major parties, along with independents, seem to be on the same page.
Absolutely. You know, the most recent Gallup poll shows that two-thirds Americans support legalization. And that's a good number to look at. But if you look deeper, this includes a majority in every age group now, every educational level, and every income level that was surveyed. You know, this is no longer a 60-70 issue. Also notable, 48% of Republicans support legalization. I wish the Senate would take note of that. Their constituents, 48%, are in support of legalization. Of course, you have 83% of Democrats, compared to that, and then about 72% of independents. And it just makes sense. I'm absolutely supportive of legalization. You know, marijuana prohibition has just clearly failed. We spent over $100 billion of taxpayer dollars fighting the drug war, and yet drugs still enter our borders every day. And prohibition is just not proven to be a successful drug control strategy, but subjects otherwise law-abiding citizens to arrest, prosecution, and imprisonment for what they do in private. So that just doesn't make sense to me. Plus, you know, we have 14 U.S. states and two U.S. territories, plus D.C., who have all already legalized adult use. The November election, cannabis was a clear winner there. You know, Arizona, Montana, New Jersey, and South Dakota all passed it. And two of those states are quite red. So I think it's time to make some change here.
Let me ask you about how this is moving in Florida, because a number of Florida cities have either decriminalized marijuana or made attempts to do so. In Jacksonville, Councilman Garrett Dennis has proposed a new bill that would allow civil citations for possession of small amounts of marijuana. He proposed a bill last year on this, too, which failed to pass. His new one will be heard in January. How do you see this playing out in Jacksonville?
I actually talked to Councilman Garrett Dennis about this a lot, and worked with his office and had some discussions, looked at maybe some changes of the language from last year to this year to try to get it to be more successful. My understanding is that it's stalled out right now, but potentially will be reheard in the new year. What this would do is it allows police officers the discretion to issue a civil citation for possession of 20 grams or less of those over 18. So it doesn't force their hand, but it gives them another option. It puts the power in the police officer's hands instead of tying them to stop concentrating on a violent crime and maybe paying attention to something that's not violent, like possession. It really wastes their time to, you know, book them, take them down to the jail. And, of course, the negative effects this has on the person arrested, I mean, something like this that's on your record, this can create a situation where you have a difficulty getting loans. You might not be eligible for public housing. You might not be able to get a new job or retain your existing job. You can lose your driver's license. You can lose your business licensure. It seems very unbalanced.
We are speaking right now with attorney Sally Peebles. She's a partner in the cannabis firm Vicente Cederberg. They're experts in marijuana cannabis law. She's also a member of Florida's Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. And as we talk about the push to decriminalize marijuana, both in Florida and around the country, where do you stand? What are your questions? Give us a call. It's 549-2937, Daniel in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Daniel. Good morning.
Good morning. I had one question regarding cultivation. Do you see in the future the laws passing to where it's not limited to just these nurseries that are allowed to cultivate?
Okay, thanks for that. What about cultivating and growing and selling marijuana? That is a big issue in Florida, Sally. There's a group called Regulate Florida and another group called Make It Legal Florida. And they're not on the same page about how this should be governed in this state. Can you explain all that?
Yeah, right now, currently in Florida, we have medical marijuana that is legal, and 381-986, the statute regulates the licensure in a limited fashion, like the caller noted. They allowed for 5 licenses to be issued back in 2015, only 5. And since then, people who lost in that original application process, they all sued the state. They turned around and sued the state and said, we should have won. 17 additional people were issued licenses based on getting a settlement through the state. So right now we have 22 licenses in the state of Florida who are allowed to do everything from grow and sell. And right now it's very unclear in the future if they will be issuing more licenses. There is a Supreme Court case called Floregrown versus the Department of Health. That's a group that is suing the state saying that limit, that arbitrary limit on the amount of licenses the state can issue is unconstitutional. And they also are challenging the required vertical integration, meaning that each of these licenses can't just cultivate. They can't just sell marijuana or just process and manufacture. They are responsible for doing everything seed to sale, which is an incredibly expensive process. It makes it really impossible for a mom and pop to open up an operation. So all eyes are on this Floregrown case. To answer your caller's question, I will suggest you watching that and seeing how that plays out, because that may remove that cap on state licenses and allow more people to get licensed. And of course, as you mentioned, there are 2 adult use ballot initiatives, Regulate Florida and Make It Legal Florida, and they are trying to legalize marijuana in 2 very different ways. One would allow the existing 22 licenses that I referred to, they would be permitted to sell adult use marijuana, and the other one would potentially open it up to additional licensees. That would be Regulate Florida, that's run by Michael Minardi.
All right. Randy in Jacksonville. Hi, Randy. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good.
Doing?
Turn your radio down, Randy, if you could, and then go ahead.
It's rainy like it's raining outside.
Oh, okay.
The comment that I would like to make is, yes, they should decriminalize federally, and, you know, at that point, even push it upon the states, because I'm coming from the black community. I'm a black person that lived in Jacksonville. I'm from Atlanta. I have family in Jacksonville here visiting. Now I just heard the radio station this morning. But it's been disproportionate in the detriment that it's hurt our community specifically because of something as simple as either possession or something as small as I smell marijuana in your car, when we know that has been used just to, you know, get people in trouble just by bad cops. Not all cops are bad, but just from the history of this plant and our people, it's been just so detrimental that they should, you know.
Sure.
Break the hands of time to a certain degree.
Rainey, thank you for that. Sally, he's right in that the statistics do bear out that people of color in particular have faced inordinate punishment for possession of drugs and drugs like cannabis. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I sure can. You know, studies have shown that white and black people consume marijuana at the exact same rate. However, African Americans are arrested 4 times the rate of their white counterparts. There's a lot of different arguments of why that is, but at the end of the day, that's the fact. And like I mentioned earlier, now you're placing African Americans in a place where they can't get a job. They are having to be paid bail. They are not eligible for public housing. It just makes it even more difficult to pull themselves up. Social justice issues are a hot topic, thankfully, right now. They always should have been a hot topic, but they are thankfully now risen to the top, especially with the Black Lives Matter issue. And I hope that federal legislatures and the state legislatures pay attention and stop making this a religious issue, stop making this a moral issue, and see this as a social justice issue.
While you were talking, I checked, according to Forbes, the people in jail for marijuana-related offenses, incarcerated for possession, sale of marijuana, it's in the tens of thousands. So that is not nothing. Okay, let's get a few more of you on the line. Lots of calls. Mitch on the South Side. Hi, Mitch.
Oh, hey, how are you doing?
Great, thanks.
My question is, once they take it out of Schedule 1, and that's no longer an issue. I'm on medical marijuana, and the cost is exorbitant. It's actually, I'm going to have to come off it because it's too expensive. But will we be able to get it paid through Medicare or Medicaid?
That's a great question, Mitch. Sally, I mean, we're talking about the decriminalization of marijuana overall and the push to legalize it for recreational use, but it is medical marijuana is legal in Florida, although it is not necessarily very affordable. So what about Mitch's situation?
My understanding is that is a possibility if the MORE Act did pass. You know, like I mentioned, it hasn't passed yet. But if it did pass in the future, federal decriminalization will have several good effects, including potential insurance coverage. Banks could now bank the industry. IRS tax code 280E, which really cripples the industry by not allowing it to take tax deductions, that could also be removed. So any law that uses the fact that marijuana is a controlled substance, a Schedule 1 controlled substance, they'll be able to take another look at it and could potentially be amended. So I hope to see something like that.
Willie on the
North.
You hope to see that.
Okay.
Willie on the North Side. Hi, Willie.
Hey, how's it going? To follow what the young man said earlier, and what your guest said about passing a bill where you put it in the hands of the police to decide who they charge or not, I don't think that's a good idea, because just like you just said, by minorities getting stopped more and charged more, and now you're gonna have cops out there choosing who they can choose to let go and who they choose to keep, I think that would be a major problem.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about it.
All right. What about that factor, Sally? Certainly, and let's talk about how this whole issue is interplaying with the push for criminal justice reform overall. What are your thoughts there? That's a big topic, but go ahead.
No, I mean, I agree with the caller 100%. I believe that marijuana should be decriminalized completely. And I can't speak on behalf of Councilman Garrett Dennis, but there could be the idea that Jacksonville City Council is not ready to take that step. So maybe you baby step the process and say, okay, the first step, we allow the police officers to have discretion. And then we push next year for having it completely decriminalized, and I don't know if that's was the thought, but I know that certainly a lot of marijuana reformers and activists way of.
All righty. And we are speaking with attorney Sally Kent Peebles. She is our resident cannabis expert here in Jacksonville, a partner with Vicente Cederberg. They are nationally regarded experts in cannabis law. She's also on Florida's Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. Lots of calls as we talk about the push to decriminalize marijuana. You might have seen the U.S. House of Representatives voted to do that last week. There's a movement here in Florida as well. Lots of calls, but let me get to a few tweets and emails first. You know, people really like to weigh in on this topic. I am not at all surprised to see that. Here is a tweet from Dave. The prohibition created a business model, just as the prohibition of alcohol did. We learn nothing from our mistakes. On Facebook, JP writes, there will need to be a cultural shift in how people consume cannabis, similar to what happened before and after alcohol prohibition. Before, it wasn't uncommon for people to drink any time of day, including at work. After, there was a lot more moderation. Pot consumption needs to grow up in the same way, he says. Here is an email from MG. I rarely even indulge in pot, but the revenue that sales can generate could solve so many problems that need solving. Is Florida trying to continue to punish and jail people of color? Is that what criminalizing is all about? Here's an email from Michael. Please point out that Congressman Matt Gaetz voted for this bill. What about John Rutherford? Well, Michael, I'm pretty sure former Sheriff Rutherford voted no on this in the U.S. House, but it was interesting, Sally, to see Matt Gaetz of the Panhandle, a very conservative congressman, vote yes to decriminalize. And so that gets at what we were talking about earlier. There really is, at least among the public, bipartisan support for this. We won't see the Senate pass it, the Republican-controlled Senate, but that doesn't necessarily reflect the will of the voters.
Absolutely. I'm trying to look at who voted on it. I know Matt Gaetz has been incredibly supportive of Florida's medical marijuana market, and has been one of the champions of the bill we had here. So that was no surprise that he voted for it. I mean, I think it's just common sense, the benefits of legalization. Of course, we're going to see the eradication or at least the lessening of the black market. It improves the quality and safety of products. You know, if you're people who are anti-marijuana legalization, they often say, well, we don't want people smoking pot. It'd be bad for you. Well, then they should support marijuana because regulated marijuana is tested for pesticides and other toxins. They're subject to safety standards that are created by the state and must be abided by the licensees to keep those licensed. Marijuana regulated products have strict labeling requirements, so you know exactly what you're consuming. And of course, one of your callers pointed out the economic benefits of legalization. You're taking the money out of the cartel's pocket and putting it in and generating tax revenue for the state. And the states can use that money for education, college scholarships for low-income students, schools, road infrastructure, and we see a lot of states that are regulating marijuana doing things like that. It can generate a ton of jobs and has done so in the state of Florida. And that's not to mention, of course, the social justice issues and allowing police enforcement's time and effort to focus on serious crime that we mentioned earlier.
All right, let's take one more call. It's Brad at the Beaches. Hey, Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I would say the number one benefit of this, having lost a loved one in the last 2 years that went through hospice and was on Medicare, the idea that you can't even bring up medical marijuana to the doctors or to the hospice facilities. I mean, at one time they said, look, we don't want to even include this in the chart in case they have a problem with it. The idea that patients dying in their last days are only able to receive something, Oxycontin, hydrocodone, some, you know, they'll shell out all kinds of money for narcotics to give through Medicare. But you can't even discuss paying privately to bring medical marijuana as a sleeping aid, as a pain aid. And I think that's the number one thing we could do. I also believe what Willie said, we don't need discretion. Either you get a ticket for having a small amount or you go to jail. The last thing I need is an officer going, well, you know, I could take you to jail. So that's my point. You guys have a great day. Thank you for these great guests.
Thank you, Brad. And I'm so sorry about your dad. You know, Sally, the argument that we need compassionate use of medical marijuana won the day in Florida. Although, as Brad pointed out, it's not always as easy to make that happen for people who are suffering as it could be. But all of that said, do you anticipate Congress to take this up again? What can we anticipate with the incoming Biden administration on this?
Well, you know, at this time, the Senate's really not expected to take up the bill, and the MORE Act would need to be reintroduced into the next congressional session after January 3rd, 2021, to progress any further. You know, Biden, as you may know, he was really one of the Democratic Party's most prominent drug warriors in Congress for years. I mean, his firm opposition to cannabis legalization is a stance that set him far apart from every other major Democratic contender in this last election. He really sponsored some of the country's most punitive drug legislation. However, when he started angling to be the presidential candidate, he did walk back his positions and apologized for supporting some of those punitive bills, and now he supports decriminalization. He still appears to oppose legalization. Interestingly, he has mentioned that he might want to reschedule. That's opposed to deschedule, which is removing it from the CSA. Rescheduling would be shifting it into maybe a Schedule 2, where other pharmaceutical drugs are, like methamphetamines and oxycodone and Adderall. That's a little worrisome because now you're putting it in the FDA's purview, and it would have to go through the FDA testing, which really would disrupt the state's ability right now to have these licensees operate. So we're hoping that Biden kind of sees the light. I know that there's a lot of people talking to him right now and educating him. And, you know, Kamala Harris, interestingly, she was one of the prime sponsors for the MORE Act. So I hope as with her as vice president, he and, you know, the White House can really be someone that works with us and not against us.
Always good to get your insights. Sally Kent Peebles, member of Florida's Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee and a partner at the Vicente Cederberg Cannabis Law Firm. Sally, thanks so much and have a great holiday.
You too. Take care.
Speaking of the holidays, we're wrapping up a very nice gift for all of you out there. Later in the hour, we've got an exciting announcement from WJCT Public Media. But up next.
Children can be injured by these things. These include toys that shoot, toys that are made with small parts.
It's the gift list you don't want under the tree. A look at this season's most dangerous toys for kids. That's next. We'll be right back.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
Turntable Tuesday can now be heard on Anthology on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3. For the best on vinyl, listen to Anthology Tuesdays at 9. Turntable Tuesday, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Welcome back. Well, there's a new list out this season of toys that you want to avoid putting under the tree this year for your children. The group World Against Toys Causing Harm, or WATCH, is out with its nominees for the 10 worst toys of 2020. It's a reminder we need to keep toy safety top of mind when shopping for that perfect holiday gift. In 2018, there were more than 226,000 toy-related injuries in the U.S., according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. I spoke about it with attorney Wayne Hogan, president of the Terrell Hogan firm. Take a listen. Hey, Wayne, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Good to have you. So we're in the shopping season, and if you're buying for a little one, you're looking for toys. But every year you join us at this time and talk about the 10 worst toys out there on the market, the ones that can actually cause harm. Tell us about this list. What caught your eye about the list this year?
Well, this organization, WATCH, World Against Toys Causing Harm, has been doing this for years, and they go through the toys that are out there on the market and look for the ones that have various kinds of hazards that are really worrisome for parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles who are buying toys for children.
Right.
And so, each year there's a different grouping of toys, but they continue to present the same hazards.
And these are injuries that are honestly preventable. They're just not made well. They have little tiny parts kids can swallow. I mean, there are a number of problems with them, right?
Oh, yes. You've identified it right there. I mean, we're talking about how children can be injured by these things, and these include toys that shoot, toys that are made with small parts or are small themselves, too small so that they could go down the child's windpipe, toys that can strangle a child with a cord usually, toys that are sharp and can go into an eye or cut the child in their face, or toys that are made out of materials that are too hard and obviously can cause an injury as well to the eye socket or something like that. And this year, there are a number of toys that do that. There's a missile launcher, what can go wrong with that, of course, which can go up to 75 feet, obviously, at close range. That can hurt a child, put a child's eye out, even though it's blunt in its makeup. We have two sets of toys, one Calico Critters Nursery Friends, it's called, the other called My Sweet Love, Lots to Love Baby Minis. But both of them have small parts that can go down a child's windpipe. And the easy way to test for that, and we've talked about this before, is to take a toilet paper tube, and if the part will go down into that, it's too small and is dangerous to the child.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have on this year's list one that needs to be paid attention to, and that is toys that will strangle. Usually it is the cord on a pull-behind type toy on wheels. The maximum length of those is supposed to be only 18 inches. Oftentimes they're longer. Those can get wrapped around the child's throat and cause the child to die or be injured for life. And then we have an Avengers-inspired vibranium power FX claw, it's called, and the problem with that is that it's sharp and it's hard, and that can scar a child for life or put a child's eye out. Another one is something called the Original Boomerang Interactive Stunt UFO, which has a revolving fan. And of course, they give warnings that say, don't stick your hand in there because it will cut you. But it also says that you can toss it to the other child. So go figure. That's one of the problems with these things. They'll put warnings on there. But the parents, the people that are buying, need to be aware of these issues, whether
sure.
it shoots, whether they're small parts, whether it could strangle, whether it's sharp, or whether it's hard. And then I wanted to mention one other, which is really unusual this year, and it's called Sci-Fi Slime. And it has sodium tetrachlorate in it. It has zinc sulfite in it. It has magnetite in it, and has big warnings about the dangers from these things. But nevertheless, you're turning them over to children. And unless a parent is going to be with the child all the time, then the child can't be using what you're buying. So without running these risks. So poor design, insufficient warning, and then we don't even know about the manufacturing itself because nobody's in there inspecting these.
Inspecting.
Factories.
You know, and there's one from the Marvel Universe. There's one from Star Wars Mandalorian, a lightsaber.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these That's are right. such popular things right now that it can be challenging to get the message through to parents that just because it's from this huge franchise that's so popular that it still might not be safe. Is that part of the problem?
Basically, they sell the name. In other words, the companies that produce these films and things like that are happy because they get paid for somebody to use their name. But they don't have any control over what is done with that name. And so you run the risk. There aren't really many of these things are made overseas. So their safety standards are not what ours are. Now here we are in a pandemic. People are shopping online more than ever. But online, you can't really read the packaging to know whether the warnings are helpful or not. You can't inspect the toy when it's over there. When, you know, you can hover over it, as they say, and you can see it enlarged, but that's not like really seeing the toy. You don't know where the toy is made, what kind of paint is on the toy. All of these kinds of design and warning problems come along, especially now when we're in a pandemic and more people are buying things online.
Sure. Now, and you have represented families who've had kids injured by dangerous toys. What's your advice to consumers out there if they realize they have something like this with their child?
Well, one thing is to, get rid of it, of course, but and not by putting it in an aftermarket. Don't send it to a yard sale. In other words, you really return it to the store, say, I don't want it, or at least attempt to do it. But they can contact the Consumer Product Safety Commission because it has the ability to issue recalls. So the more they become aware of these problems, the more they can act. Or you can be in touch with a law firm that does what we do, which is represent people who have been injured by products, whether they're toys or any other kind of product that has these design and manufacturing or warning defects, that can lead to change. We had a specific example from years ago, the one that I always remember most crisply, and that's the one where a child did choke, and that's why I talked about it so much, on a toy that was capable of going down the windpipe, and the child died as a result. The end result of that case was that the manufacturer took that type of product off the market.
Again, that's at terrellhogan.com. We'll also have information and images of the toys on the worst list on our website at wjct.org. And thanks to you, Wayne Hogan of Terrell Hogan. Always good to hear your voice. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa, for this and for all the good you do for this community. Really appreciate it.
Okay, here's an idea for a gift for someone you care about. A book. Yes, it's our December book club, and we've got a book lover's bucket list for you from our fearless book club leader, Stacy Goldring. Hey, Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. You've got two great suggestions for December, beginning with Gertrude Stein's autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, which you're going to be discussing this month. Tell us about it.
This is a great book and perfect for any book lover who wants to say, you know, oh, yes, I've read Gertrude Stein. But clearly you can't because it's very kind of modern, dense. It's almost like trying to read a cubist painting. But as far as autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, this is her most accessible book to the reader. And it's kind of chatty. Like you get to hear gossip about all these incredible people that have become such icons in the art world and the literary world because she runs into James Joyce and Hemingway and you name it, Matisse, Picasso. She's complaining and complimenting all these people, and she's doing it through the voice of Alice B. Toklas, her companion, her mate through life. And what happens is you're reading this very interesting book that's praising Gertrude Stein, but it's all through Alice's love and voice. But really, it's written by Gertrude Stein, so you're reading the book the whole time going, who's talking here? Is it Alice? Is it Gertrude? It's just a fun ride. It's very easy to read, and it speaks to American identity. So it's really relevant to today as well. It hasn't lost any of its contemporary feeling, even though it was written, quite a while ago in expat Paris, but I just loved it and I highly recommend it.
I always love your recommendations. The other one you recommend this month is My Antonia by the great Willa Cather.
Exactly. For the book lover who wants to really get into, the ethos of our amazing country, this is the perfect book for this type of year because when you read it, you'll be cold because it takes place in Nebraska and it's in, remember, with sod, homes, etc. And it's about the true grit, endurance, and ruggedness of our American spirit. And what I love about reading, Melissa, is it brings us together. Doesn't matter our background or what we believe in, but as Americans, we can all be so proud of both of these titles because these are both written by Americans.
That's right. And two fabulous female authors as well. Now, you're going to be discussing the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas on December 15th and 16th virtually. People love to attend your book club discussions. How can they zoom on to this one?
Just go to chapterendnotes.com and you can sign up for either either day. And I look for what's great. What has been a silver lining with COVID is we've been attracting readers from everywhere. So it's so fun to meet people from all over to discuss these amazing books. And you can sign up there. You can find the books there. And another great gift to give to readers is the gift of a book club membership, which I also have available. If you want to treat your friend to a fun experience together virtually, you can just go ahead and get a membership online and enjoy discussing great literature with new friends, old friends, etc.
So again, it's chapterendnotes.com for Stacy's book club discussion. And do you think in this pandemic, everything's gone virtual, including book clubs, but I think they seem more popular than ever this year.
I agree. All of these virtual communities that we have woven together in order to cope with, social distancing, they're here to stay. So I am looking forward to being together with my my readers after COVID is over. But I also am incredibly grateful for the opportunity to connect with readers everywhere, and it builds a bond of common experience based on the written word. And there's nothing more reaffirming than just unplugging from everything else and enjoying a good literary discussion.
Again, it's chapterendnotes.com. She's Stacy Goldring. It's our monthly book club. Great discussions on tap this month. Sign up and register and join the fun. And have a very happy holiday, Stacy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You too, Melissa. Bye-bye.
And we've got some more goodies for you, everybody. In a moment, WJCT Public Media has a new streaming package just for you. If you're a PBS or a BritBox fan, you won't want to miss it. We'll tell you about it right after this. Don't go away.
At Vistar, members can think outside the branch and manage their accounts whenever they want by using the Vistar app. Check balances, make transfers, payments, check deposits, and more. Info at vistarcu.org. Vistar Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and services tailored for active retirees. Information at vickerslanding.com.
I'm Ari Shapiro from NPR. You made a commitment to being more informed, and now listening to this station is part of your life. You can commit to another habit and make the journalism you count on possible. As a sustaining member, your gift will be charged automatically every month, so you'll know you're doing your part to support reliable news and information. Here's how to give.
Please call 353-9528 or visit wjct.org.
I'm Robin Young. Americans could be getting the coronavirus vaccine before the end of the month as anti-vaccine groups flood the internet with misinformation and conspiracy theories. 31 million people subscribe to one anti-vaccine Facebook page alone. We'll speak with a Stanford researcher who tracks conspiracies next time here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Eric Burton and Adrian Quesada are proof that you don't need a live music scene to get noticed. They're the duo behind the Black Pumas. Critics are calling them the new sound of psychedelic soul. They've been nominated for 3 Grammys, including Record of the Year and Album of the Year. So before they get too famous, we'll meet them and hear more about the band next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, WJCT Public Media Today launched its newest member benefit. It's a streaming package of PBS Passport and BritBox. We're calling it the Jack's Bundle. Now, this is an exclusive combination, the first of its kind for PBS Passport and BritBox. And what it does is provide WJCT supporters with access to the finest and largest collection of British programming that you can view anytime, anywhere, and from any device through one sign-up process. With all the streaming we're doing right now, you need to add this to your list. CEO David McGowan is on the line to tell us all about it. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Great to be with you.
Good to talk to you. It's exciting that we're launching the Jack's Bundle this week because there's a real demand for British TV and films and, of course, PBS Passport, too. So how is this all going to be packaged up?
Well, we're really, really pleased to be able to bring this new benefit to our members. It's something they've been working on for a long time. And the reason is, as you suggest, Melissa, is that we know that we've got lots of our television viewers who love British programming. We offer essentially 2 full nights of British programming on our television channel on Saturday nights and on Sunday nights, of course, with Masterpiece and other great programming. And so we have teamed up with BritBox, which is a service offered by the BBC and ITV, to offer a bundle. And what that means is that if you're interested in contributing to WJCT, all you have to do is go to our website, go to wjct.org/jacksbundle, and for a monthly contribution or a one-time contribution, you can enter your information. You don't have to go and sign up separately for BritBox. We'll bundle Passport and BritBox all together for you. And we know that people are, I mean, maybe you've been listening or watching The Crown recently like
yeah,
I have.
Yeah, sure.
Or tons of other great programming on Masterpiece and, you know, Streaming Now accounts, Melissa, for about 25% of all watching television. So, you know, we know that people are kind of cocooning these days, especially as the weather has turned cooler. And so this is just a great opportunity to support WJCT and all of the work we do through this new benefit for contributors.
Right. And these are shows from a really rich library. By the way, let me just plug PBS, which just celebrated its 50-year anniversary in America. But we're talking about the 3 seasons of Victoria, British mysteries like Grantchester and Endeavour, shows like Father Brown, Inspector Morse, the Agatha Christie adaptations, comedies like There She Goes, starring David Tennant, Gavin and Stacey, starring James Corden, and more. And, you know, whether you have ties to the British Isles or not, these are popular shows in our library, David. And you, by the way, let's point out, you used to live in London, so you know this from both sides of the ocean.
I did, and of course, so I'm a little bit of a sucker for British programming, I have to admit, but I've just started watching a new series on BritBox called Kill Bill with Rob Lowe, actually, which is absolutely terrific, and, you know, we do, as you mentioned, we have a long history of offering terrific British programming, and we do that now streaming on Passport. But this is really an unparalleled opportunity to get all of the great British programming that you love together in one place, in one bundle. And so it's really a great way for people to support all of the work that we do, whether that's the work that you and your team, Melissa, do day in, day out, the Fred Rogers Sweater Drive, which we just did yesterday, which distributed thousands of pieces of clothing and other material to the homeless and city shelters across the city. You know, we do a lot of work in this community, and we're really pleased to offer people who contribute to that work a new benefit that we hope they're really going to enjoy.
Yeah, and I want to give a special shout out right now down to St. Augustine, where there is a vibrant British expatriate community. I am talking to you guys, but really to everybody out there, because this is a great opportunity for our whole community of viewers. As WJCT brings PBS Passport and BritBox together, all of your favorite PBS shows and the biggest collection ever of British TV, now available for on-demand streaming anytime, anywhere, from any device. Just go to wjct.org/jacksbundle. If you have someone who loves this programming in your life, it would make a great gift for them as well. So, David, thank you so much, and we'll see you soon.
My pleasure.
Again, that website is wjct.org/jacksbundle. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. They go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We really value your feedback. And if you missed any portion of today's show, catch our podcast up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. And this is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's going to warm up a little bit, but keep those jackets on and please keep wearing your masks.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.